Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, on our Capitol Report, senators are holding up a confirmation hearing for former Congressman Darrell Issa's appointment to a trade position due to a red flag and an FBI background check. Issa has said if he doesn't get that appointment, he'll run for Congress instead against Duncan Hunter. We'll have details on Issa's troubled past on today's show. State Senator Marie Waldron has introduced a bill to make Sandag give voters a say before shifting Transnet funding away from projects promised to East County residents. And in Lemon Grove, firefighters helped citizens kick off a drive for a ballot initiative to raise sales taxes in the financially troubled city. On Crime Beat, hear about an arson arrest in Otay. And in Sacramento, Governor Newsom has issued an executive order to regulate vaping amid growing health concerns. On Green Scene, learn how you can take a free ride on a trolley, bus, or train locally on October 2nd, which is Free Ride Day, and help reduce your carbon footprint. On Destination East County, hear about some festive events coming up in East County, including a Chaldean Festival, concerts at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center, Oktoberfest, a Kids Care Festival, and more. And then on the second half of our show today, in honor of Climate Action Day, we'll be re-airing our interview with Dr. Jeffrey Severinghouse, one of the world's leading climate scientists. The interview originally aired in 2016, but is even more compelling today. Hear directly from the scientists who pioneered research to measure CO2 levels in ice cores in Antarctica, on why global warming is not cyclical, and what makes him so certain that man's actions are accelerating climate change, and why we must take action now. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Retired Congressman Darrell Issa has said he will run against Republican Duncan Hunter if his appointment by President Trump to head up the U.S. Trade and Development Agency is not approved by early November. But now, both Democratic and Republican leaders of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee say that an FBI background file on Issa raises red flags. Republican Chair Jim Risch says the committee won't vote unless the White House makes the full FBI file available. Ranking Democrat Robert Menendez says the background file information is problematic and potentially disqualifying. Issa claims the information is already public on Wikipedia and dates back to his time in the Army when he got a bad conduct rating and demotion amid accusations that he stole a car from another soldier. Issa has reportedly said, the LA Times reports, "I've owned up to being a 17-year-old kid and not a very good private." But according to Senator Menendez, Issa's statement about the FBI's findings is not truthful. "If they were all public, then we wouldn't be having the difficulty that we have," he says. Issa's Wikipedia entry lists additional legal problems he reportedly encountered after his discharge from the military, when he was reportedly arrested twice and indicted by a grand jury for another car theft, though prosecutors dropped those charges. In a separate incident, he pled guilty to carrying a concealed weapon, received probation and a fine. He also faced suspicion of arson after a building he owned burned down in a fire caused by gasoline or other accelerants, the investigation found. Issa had just boosted his fire insurance policy by 462% and moved out computers holding important information shortly before the fire, according to the insurance investigation. Issa was also once named among the top 10 most corrupt members of Congress by Citizens for Ethics Reform in Washington, or CREW. Now, it's unclear whether the troubling information in Issa's background check by the FBI relates to any of these incidents or to something else. If the Republican-controlled Senate refuses to confirm Issa, a Republican, to the Trade Commission due to failing to pass an FBI background check, it begs the question, should voters consider the information disqualifying for Issa to be their representative in Congress if he pursues his second-choice late-career option and runs in the 50th Congressional District? Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
For months, officials in East County and North County have assailed as highway robbery a plan announced by Sandag to cancel some highway projects and instead spend Transnet extension funds approved by voters on transit projects, such as high-speed rail and shared electric vehicles instead. Hoping to derail that plan, Assembly Republican leader Marie Waldron of Escondido has introduced Assembly Bill 1398. It would require three steps before Sandag could make any substantive changes to its transportation spending plans. A two-thirds vote by Sandag's board, public hearings in all four regions of our county, and approval by two-thirds of voters countywide in a special election. Waldron says, quote, "Sandag cannot be trusted to look out for people in all parts of our diverse county. Our community deserves confidence that their tax money is being used appropriately and that Sandag is keeping its promise to voters. No agency should be able to operate in the dark," she adds. Voters first passed a sales tax increase for transportation funding in 1988 for 40 years. In 2004, voters approved extending the tax increase for another 40 years. But the Transnet tax extension doesn't provide enough money to fund all the projects listed when voters cast their ballots for highway and transit projects. Sandag officials also face pressure from the state to reduce greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change, so they're looking to cut vehicle traffic and boost transit powered by clean fuels. In June, the agency announced plans to cancel 14 freeway and highway projects and instead fund creation of bike lanes. The agency has also proposed yet another sales tax hike and a congestion tax for motorists, despite a poll showing that voters oppose these changes by a 2-to-1 margin, even in urban areas, KUSI reported in June. Some elected officials have reacted with outrage to the proposed roadway cuts. At a press conference in Ramona, where proposed widening of State Route 67 is among the projects on Sandag's chopping block, Poway Mayor and supervisorial candidate Steve Voss exclaimed in exasperation, "We paid the sales tax, we paid the gas tax, now fix the damn road." He says the high number of accidents on the dangerous stretch of highway has given it the nickname Blood Alley. Supervisor Diane Jacob says the highway is a lifeline during evacuations, but it became gridlocked when thousands of residents fled the Witch Fire in 2007. So widening is crucial for public safety. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells sent a letter to Sandag on behalf of the city council opposing the highway cuts. He says many are in East County, including key improvements to Interstate 8, Interstate 15, State Route 67, and State Route 52 connectors to State Route 125. Santee's elected officials have also voiced concerns over the Transnet funding shifts, noting that new housing projects built and in the pipeline are adding to the gridlock on State Route 52. The Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce recently formed a committee to address concerns over pending funding cuts for Interstate 8 improvements in East County. Some Sandag board members support the shifting of funds from freeways to mass transit, arguing that it will be impossible to meet goals for cutting greenhouse gas emissions without projects such as new coaster cars for train service along the coast. Encinitas Mayor Catherine Blakespear has stated, quote, "I urge my colleagues in the strongest possible terms to support funding for the new trains and reject any plan that does not do that. There's no chance that expanding the roadways and taking away the transit is going to meet the goals." But officials in areas slated to lose highway funds argue that it's unfair to force voters countywide to pay for projects that they are not benefiting from, while failing to complete projects that were previously approved to improve transportation for motorists in North and East County. They want to see Sandag live up to the Transnet slogan, "Promises made, promises kept." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
Firefighters led a team of volunteers in Lemon Grove over the weekend, collecting signatures on a ballot measure to raise the city's sales tax by 0.75 cents to help fund vital programs. The future of the city hangs in the balance, with Lemon Grove struggling financially. The vast majority of revenues fund sheriff and firefighting, with not enough left over to fund projects sought by residents such as sidewalks, road improvements, parks, recreation programs, and more. The ballot measure, called the Lemon Grove Security Petition, would put Lemon Grove sales tax on par with neighboring La Mesa and double the revenues that Lemon Grove receives from sales taxes. The effort is being led by a group of citizens spearheaded by former councilman George Gastel. but supporters have only until the end of September to collect enough signatures to qualify for the ballot, and so far they are not yet on track to reach that goal. They are seeking volunteers to help walk door to door. Volunteers will meet in the Sprouts parking lot on Lemon Grove Avenue on Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. Any registered voter in California may circulate petitions. Registered voters in Lemon Grove may sign the petition outside Sprouts on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon and Sundays from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. before September 30th. A similar measure passed in neighboring El Cajon during the recession with help of police, firefighters, and a fiscally responsible Republican city council. La Mesa voters also passed a sales tax increase in recent years. Brad Maxfield, president of Heartland Firefighters Union, has worked in the city for 10 years, but now, he says, public safety is getting depleted, along with other programs, so a tax is needed to serve the citizens. Costs of public safety are going up faster than the city's revenues, since Lemon Grove has only limited property taxes due to having largely low and middle-income housing. Unlike La Mesa and El Cajon, Lemon Grove doesn't have a regional shopping mall to generate hefty sales taxes either. If the measure doesn't pass, the 40-year-old city could be forced to consider disincorporating. But it's unclear whether the county or a neighboring city would be willing to take over the area, given its revenue shortfall and public debts, debts which the other entity would also be forced to acquire. Last year, a measure considered by the city council failed to obtain the 4-vote supermajority needed to put it on the ballot. Councilman Jerry Jones, who opposed the council proposal for a smaller sales tax increase, says he supports the ballot measure after the amount was increased from 0.5 cent to 0.75 cents. That may not sound like a lot, but he says, I've done the calculations, and that gives us 10 years at the status quo and enough money at the beginning to invest in programs and infrastructure to make us more sustainable. Jones says the challenge will be in making sure that the money is spent wisely. The initiative would require a Citizens Advisory Commission, however, to track how money is raised and recommend to the city how it is spent, tracking it as well, thus providing full transparency. You can find more information on the ballot measure at protectlemongrove.com or visit Sweeten Lemon Grove, that's S-W-E-E-T-E-N, Sweeten Lemon Grove, on Facebook and Instagram. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Jonathan Getz.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Crime Beat report. San Diego police have arrested a suspected arsonist. 49-year-old Ramona Guevara is suspected of starting as many as 10 brush fires on September 13th and 14th near a homeless camp on Bear Way in Otay Valley, the Times of San Diego reports. Witness descriptions and a helicopter search led to the arrest of the suspect. Crews from multiple fire departments responded to the blazes.
This is Brianna Gomez with the Health Report. Governor Gavin Newsom had issued an executive order to regulate vaping or e-cigarette sales. He said in a press conference, quote, "In the absence of any legislative effort that's successful, we want to see how far we can go." The order directs state regulators to crack down on the sale of black market vaping products, develop new anti-smoking public awareness campaigns, and target underage smokers, potentially with new warning ads, CalMatters reports. The governor's order also instructs the State Department of Tax and Fee Administration to research ways to tax e-cigarette products. He also called on the legislature to ban e-cigarettes when legislators return to session in January. He says, quote, "You don't have bubblegum-flavored, mango-flavored tobacco products unless you're trying to target an audience that you are losing, and that's young people. Hundreds of young people have fallen ill with severe lung disease in recent weeks, and at least 11 people have died from vaping, which coats the lungs with oils. The risk of immediate dangers posed by vaping has led authorities around the nation scrambling to take action." Earlier this week, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo issued an executive order banning all flavored e-cigarettes except menthol after studies show that 40% of high school students admitted to vaping. Michigan also just enacted a similar ban, and President Donald Trump has announced that he wants to ban all non-tobacco flavored vaping products at the federal level. But the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network has criticized Newsom's order for not going far enough. The organization is calling for a complete ban on sales of all flavored tobacco products. But Newsom says California does not allow a governor to ban products outright without legislative support. At the press conference, Newsom called upon concerned parents to not just talk to their teenage children, but to lobby their lawmakers. I would encourage those parents to be part of an army of support to help the legislature do what it needs to do and to help the president and Congress do what they already should have done, and that's ban these products, he said.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. October 2nd is Free Ride Day across San Diego County, and it's also California's Clean Air Day. You're invited to ditch traffic gridlock, relax, and take a ride, all while helping to reduce air pollution. The Metropolitan Transit Service and the North County Transit District are both offering free rides to everyone on all three trolley lines and fixed-line buses, as well as the Coaster and Sprinter trains. Riders can even win prizes, including a full year of free transit, Aztec football tickets, MTS day passes, plus gift certificates to Vaughn's, Starbucks, and Restaurant Week. You can enter by stopping by special booths on Free Ride Day or by sharing your Free Ride Day experience on social media by midnight, October 2nd, with the hashtag SDFreeRideDay19. Last year, over 53,000 trips were taken on our region's first-ever Free Ride Day, and that's a record that MTS hopes to beat this year. Their website states, "We're opening up our whole system to change the way San Diego moves." If you haven't ridden transit before, MTS even has professional trip planners you can call at 619-233-3004. Weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. and weekends from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Or you can check the website's trip planner and watch a video with a step-by-step guide. You can download the One Bus Away app to zoom into your location and even find a map with transit stops near you, as well as arrival times for the next bus or trolley service. No trolley near you? No problem. You can leave your vehicle in one of the many park and ride lots near those transit stops.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region. Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Gerald Stevenson, guest hosting for Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County features upcoming shows at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center, the Chaldean American Festival in El Cajon, a chamber music series at Cuyamaca College, fall at the farm and berry picking in Julian, and a Johnny Appleseed celebration in Santa Isabel.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including Oktoberfest in La Mesa and El Cajon, Kids Care Fest in Lemon Grove, the annual Green Homes Tour, a Fair Trade Gift Fair in La Mesa, Cajon Classic Cruises, and the last summer concerts outdoors in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a full season of stellar entertainment lined up. Concerts coming up soon include internationally acclaimed guitarist Al DiMeola on September 24th, the Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly Rock and Roll Dream Tour, featuring holographs of the late great stars on October 1st, and famed singer Patti LaBelle on October 3rd. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. or The Magnolia on Facebook.
The Chaldean community invites you, your family, and friends to the 8th Annual Chaldean American Festival, September 28th and 29th, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Hillsdale Middle School in El Cajon. This event features a fun weekend of cultural foods, music, dancing, carnival games, rides, inflatables, craft and business booths, raffles, and other entertainment.
The Echo Chamber Music Series, now in its third year, is taking its 2019-2020 season at Cuyamaca College's Performing Arts Theater to new heights, with 14 concerts featuring classical music performers such as Jason Vera, Bach Collegium, the Dolly Quartet, and members of the San Diego Symphony and other internationally acclaimed musicians who have performed across the globe. The season opens September 28th and runs through June 4th. Find a full list of performers and ticket information at echochamermusic.org.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend from September 21st through October 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hay rides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. There's also a seasonal farm store featuring country wares and more. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the You Pick link to find activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
Julian Farm and Orchard has 24 acres with over 2,000 berry plants. On Saturdays and Sundays through September, you can pick blackberries and raspberries from 12 to 3 p.m. The farm is located on Highway 78 in Santa Isabel near Julian.
Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian, will host an Apple Days event complete with cider pressing and a Johnny Appleseed celebration on Saturday, September 28th, and Sunday, September 29th, from 1 to 2 p.m. There are also regular weekend activities later on, from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Reservations are required for this family fun event, which will include cider pressing and three-person team of apple bobbing on a string and a country hoedown with jug band participation. Plus, learn about John Chapman, known as Johnny Appleseed. Regular weekend activities later in the day include a petting zoo, reptile show, archery, tomahawk throwing, a slingshot range, and a ghost town to explore. There is a fee for the activities, and reservations are required for the Johnny Appleseed celebration. You can reserve your space and get more information at fortcross.com.
The German American Club of San Diego hosts its annual Oktoberfest at its headquarters in El Cajon on the last weekend of September and the first weekend of October. The hours are 4 to 10 p.m. on Fridays, 12 noon to 10 p.m. on Saturdays, and noon to 9 p.m. on Sundays. The celebration begins with an opening day parade and keg tap, plus crowning of this year's Oktoberfest Queen on Friday night, September 27th at 6:30 p.m. An authentic band is flown in from Germany for the event, which also features German foods such as bratwurst, ox on a spit, sauerkraut, Bavarian pastries, and plenty of German beers. Find full details at GermanClubsSanDiego.org.
You're invited to don your lederhosen for the 46th annual La Mesa Oktoberfest, which is gearing up for over 100,000 revelers celebrating German traditions October 4th through the 6th. La Mesa's Oktoberfest features three beer halls, including a new Palm Avenue location with flowing pints of craft beer and Oktoberfest games. You can bring your dancing shoes to step lively to traditional German music, non-traditional entertainment, and the chicken dance. Guests can also savor authentic food, festivities, and family-friendly activities such as German Kinder Carnival, complete with Ferris wheel, rock climbing wall, inflatable slides, interactive art, brat eating competitions, scavenger hunts, and the ever-popular Wiener Dachshund races. There will also be over 200 vendor booths with everything from handmade crafts to holiday-themed decor. For more information, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org with Oktoberfest spelled O-K-T-O-B-E-R-F-E-S-T.
Grossmont Healthcare District invites you to Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 5th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at the Lemon Grove Recreation Center in Lemon Grove. The event includes healthy fun for the kid in all of us, including fun and active games, plus dental and vision screenings, flu shots, and more. For details, visit www.kidscarefest.org.
Just in time for holiday shopping, La Mesa Fair Trade will host a gift fair on Sunday, October 13th from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall in La Mesa. The event features sales of handcrafted fair trade gifts, home decor, clothing, and jewelry through a variety of vendors. There will also be fair trade coffee, teas, ice cream, and chocolate to savor. The goal of fair trade is to assure fair wages to create brighter futures for families in developing countries. For more information, you can call 619-466-3241.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue through September. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many restaurants nearby before rocking out at the outdoor concerts. Upcoming concerts include The Mighty Untouchables with contemporary and dance music on September 20th and Back to the Garden's Beatles Show on September 27th for the season finale with a special 6:30 start time. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
The San Diego Green Building Council, a nonprofit organization promoting sustainable building and community practices in San Diego, will host its 10th annual Green Homes Tour on Saturday, October 19th and Sunday, October 20th. The tour has been expanded this year to 2 full days, showcasing a diverse collection of the most innovative, eco-friendly homes in our region. Saturday will include homes in Central San Diego, East County, and South County. Sunday will focus on homes in North County. Find more information at sdgreenhomestour.org.
El Cajon's classic cruise nights continue in the fall months each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Next up, in honor of Climate Action Day, we are re-airing our interview with Dr. Jeffrey Severinghaus. He's one of the world's leading climate scientists at Scripps Institute. The interview originally aired in 2016, but it's even more compelling today. You'll hear directly from the scientist who pioneered research to measure carbon dioxide levels in ice cores in Antarctica on why global warming is not cyclical and what makes him so certain that man's actions are accelerating climate change and why we must take action. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. In the last week, climate change has been much in the news, with the Global Climate Summit going on in Paris and Climate Change March in San Diego. I've been interviewing prominent politicians, and a couple of them, when I told them about the 97% of the world's climate scientists who now believe that climate change is real and that man is contributing to it, you know, a couple of them said, well, who are these climate scientists? So we thought it would be a good idea to bring one on the show.
Great. I'm a card-carrying climate scientist.
Card-carrying climate scientist, that's really right. So skeptics, tune in. My very special guest today is Jeff Severinghaus. He is a noted climate scientist and professor of geosciences at Scripps Institute of Oceanography at the University of California, San Diego. He was recently elected to the prestigious National Academy of Sciences, an organization of top scientists founded by Congress way back under President Abraham Lincoln, dedicated to advising the federal government and furthering science for the public good. His research focuses on using gas bubbles trapped in ice cores to track changes in ancient climate change. He's done measurements in Antarctica and Greenland, and his newest research raises the question of whether the addition of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere through the burning of fossil fuels could also produce a more rapid change in climate than many computer models on global climate have already predicted. He was a Clara C. Patterson medalist of the Geochemical Society for his breakthrough research in environmental geochemistry, and he's held several fellowships, including a graduate fellowship with the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, and with the University of California and the American Geophysical Union. Most recently, NOAA's annual State of the Climate report came out and revealed that 7 climate records were broken in 2014. Jeff Severinghouse, our guest today, has famously observed that if this is the Earth's annual checkup, the doctor is saying you are gravely ill. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Marian. It's good to be here.
Tell us how you first became involved in studying climate change, of all things.
Well, when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time outdoors. My dad, took me on long backpacking trips and, I became a lover of the outdoors, and I knew that my career somehow had to include being outdoors. And so I gravitated towards geology and geochemistry. And I think that's probably how I eventually ended up studying climate.
Very good. You call yourself a paleoclimatologist. Can you tell our listeners what exactly that means?
Yeah, paleoclimatology just means the study of ancient climate change, and it helps us understand how the climate system works so that we can predict better what's going to happen in the future.
Very important. I've got some figures here that over 1 million years of ice ages and hot spells, the ice cores showed the carbon dioxide levels ranged from just under 200 parts per million to under 300 parts per million. But since the industrial age, about 200 years ago, when all the factories started pumping fossil fuels into the atmosphere, the CO2 levels have risen to 400 parts per million today. So, Jeffrey, there's certainly a lot of skeptics out there who aren't convinced that climate change is real. For those folks, is there any scientific validation behind those who say that today's levels are just part of a natural cycle?
No, definitely not. The CO2 that we measure in the ice cores, showing it variations, as you said, between about 200 and 300 parts per million over the ice age cycles, that CO2 came out of the ocean. It was a natural CO2, and it has a completely different chemistry than the CO2 that's accumulating in the atmosphere right now, which is from fossil fuels. And you can tell the difference between the two types of CO2, actually. They're not the same gas, even. So it's an absolutely no doubt that humans are causing the current increase in CO2, and it's coming from fossil fuels, and it's got all the fingerprints of fossil fuel CO2, not oceanic CO2.
Thank you for educating our listeners on that very important point. Can you summarize some of your most important research findings and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm mostly trying to understand what causes rapid climate change. Sometimes we call it abrupt climate change, because that is one of the great unknowns going into the future. As humans add gases to the atmosphere that cause warming, it is possible, though we can't say for sure, that some threshold will be crossed and the system will snap into a totally new state, which could be much, much warmer.
How bad could it get?
Well, just to give you an example, we know from looking at the ice cores that about 12,000 years ago, there was a 15 degree Fahrenheit warming in Greenland that was obviously not caused by humans. That was a natural mm-hmm. event. But the whole thing happened in about 10 years. And so it's very, very fast. That's what we call abrupt climate change. And so if humans were to sort of accidentally trigger something like that in the future, then, we'd be looking at much more profound consequences with, 15 degrees Fahrenheit, being a much more severe number than the currently predicted, 5 to 8 degrees Fahrenheit that the computer models are suggesting.
Right. That's where we can get into rising seas and areas of drought where agriculture would not be possible, or maybe mm-hmm. areas that wouldn't really sustain human life.
Right.
Let's talk about the recent findings from NOAA, that annual State of the Climate report we just talked about that you said indicates the doctor says you're gravely ill. Here were some of the findings of it, about 7 climate records that were broken last year alone. It was the hottest year on record in many places around the world since record keeping began. That includes Europe, Africa, Asia, Mexico, and parts of South America. Greenhouse gas emissions are also up. Sea surface temperatures were the highest on record, and so were ocean temperatures, since oceans trap those greenhouse gases. The sea levels are also rising, over 2.5 inches since 1993, as the glaciers are melting. And speaking of glaciers, Antarctica's rate of ice melting broke a record last year, too, and Greenland's ice melting rate was also above average. So, Jeffrey, you've done some research involving the oceans and their role in all of this. Can you tell us how important the role of oceans is in climate change?
Yeah, oceans are very important, and the reason is that they soak up an enormous amount of heat. The extra energy that's entering our planet's system right now because of greenhouse gases is an enormous number, and 93% of that energy is actually going into warming up the ocean.
Wow.
It's just because water has a very, very high capacity to hold heat. And so the ocean, in a sense, is our friend. It's actually keeping it from being nearly as warm as it would be. We would have had about double the warming that we've actually had if we didn't have an ocean to soak up all that excess heat.
What are the consequences of ocean warming at such a rapid rate?
Well, the thing that happens when water warms, it expands. So just the warming of the ocean itself causes sea level rise, mm-hmm. in addition to the melting of glaciers. So it's, right now it's about half and half. About half of the sea level rise is due to ocean warming.
Yeah. So that can impact everything from the wildlife, fishing and whales and things in the ocean, but also the weather patterns. When we talk about an El Nino, that is fueled by global climate change, ocean warming. A lot of people have a misconception, I think, that climate change only means warming, but it can also mean extreme weather patterns that bring, hurricanes, snow, all these other things. Do you want to comment a little bit on that?
Yeah, the very snowy winters that we've had, paradoxically, are a consequence of human-caused warming. And the reason is that the atmosphere becomes more wavy as it becomes warmer, and so you get these jet stream waves that sort of bring cold air very far south during some winters, but not others.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be seeing a lot more extreme weather. We're going to be seeing heat waves, real scorchers like the one that killed 70,000 people in Europe in 2003, and then we're going to see, be seeing some very snowy winters where it'll be, in a deep freeze and over the eastern U.S. for a whole month, at a time, that kind of thing. So people shouldn't be surprised by those very cold winters.
Yeah. In the past has included ice ages. Could we have another ice age?
No, absolutely not. Because right now all of the big glaciers in the world are melting like gangbusters. And so they're not. To get an ice age, basically, you have to build a huge ice sheet.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to happen.
Tell me a little bit about the core samples that you've actually pulled out and what some of the findings are that your own research has discovered.
Yeah. So my students and I wanted to test this idea that methane would come bubbling out of the ocean and out of the tundra and cause excess warming, additional warming,
mm-hmm.
in what we call a feedback, where heating causes release of gas, which then causes more heating, which then causes more release of gas.
So a vicious cycle.
Yeah. So we wanted to give that hypothesis, as we say in science, a rigorous test, and so we measured a gas in the bubbles in the ancient ice called carbon-14, which is another one of these rare forms of carbon. And we were able to show that during the last abrupt warming event that happened about 12,000 years ago, these methane sources were not active. And so, in a sense, that's good news. I mean, that's one of these threats that we can check off, saying, nope, that, you know, we don't have to worry about that one. So that's one of the achievements of my group, is to show that the methane problem that has been talked about so much of, you know, Arctic methane coming, bubbling out, that's actually not going to happen.
So it's the CO2 and the greenhouse gases that we're putting into the atmosphere ourselves that are their concern, not things that have been stored there for a gazillion years.
Yeah, exactly. So the CO2 is really the problem, that it stays in the atmosphere so long. It's roughly speaking about a third of it will be left after 100 years if you put a certain amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. So what we're doing is we're effectively setting a time bomb for our great-grandchildren, and it has a 100-year-long fuse.
Wow. You know. Can you please explain your innovative theory of what some writers have called a stripping of clouds that normally cover the ocean, how that's happened in the past and what that could mean for the future?
Yeah, so this comes out of, again, from the ice core research. What we found in the ice cores is that the southern hemisphere, from Antarctica to southern South America to New Zealand, all these places show a dramatic warming, upwards of 12 degrees Fahrenheit in a rather short time, just a few hundred years, at the end of the last ice age. And looks like the whole end of the last ice age was really triggered by this southern hemisphere rapid warming.
What caused that?
And it's not known. So my theory is really an attempt to explain that dramatic warming, and I should emphasize that this theory is not proven yet. It's just a theory. But the idea is that the ocean is very dark in its color. Think of a black parking lot on a hot summer day. And then think of how much cooler that parking lot would be if it were painted white. That's the essence of the idea. It's really very simple. The clouds are white and ocean is dark. So if you take in a part of the earth, which today is almost always covered by clouds.
The ocean.
The eastern, southern hemisphere, Pacific Ocean is where I'm thinking mostly. This area currently reflects a lot of sunlight back to space because it's white. Mm-hmm. If you were to strip off those clouds, you could suddenly have sun shining on dark colored ocean.
So it's going to absorb a lot more heat directly.
Absorbs a lot more heat directly. And so that's my hypothesis.
What makes the clouds be stripped away?
Yeah. And so atmospheric circulation, it turns out, if you move the whole rain belt, the tropical rain belts, into the southern hemisphere because of rapid southern hemisphere warming, you will strip away all those low clouds in the southern hemisphere tropical Pacific.
So the warming that occurs from pumping CO2 into the atmosphere from all these cars and factories and so forth can actually accelerate stripping away the clouds. So you're not only getting more CO2, but you're also allowing more sunlight into the planet. Is that what you're saying?
Almost, but not quite. It's the uneven heating that's the problem. So in other words, if our descendants, let's say, decide they want to artificially cool the climate, what's called geoengineering.
Okay. It's a fascinating idea.
Yeah. They spray sulfur into the atmosphere and it reflects sunlight back to space. And it's been discussed widely, though it's probably not a very good idea.
And what's the downside of it?
Well, it causes acid rain for one thing. Oh. It can cause ozone depletion for another. But perhaps most seriously, it could shift rain patterns around, and that would have tragic consequences for the billion or so people on Earth who make their livelihood from rain-fed agriculture. So anyway, it's...
Don't mess with Mother Nature, in other words.
But I'm saying that if for some reason people decide to cool off the northern hemisphere but not the southern hemisphere, then based on what we understand now, the rain belts will shift south, and that could trigger this big additional...
That 15 degrees
warming,
like you're talking
about.
How high could this go? And how close are we to the tipping point? What is the tipping point beyond which climate change could be irreversible based upon your scientific study of this issue?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. You know, we don't, unfortunately, know very well where that tipping point actually is. Many people over the years have said that 2 degrees is probably a safe number that we should not exceed, and that's 2 degrees centigrade or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And the scientific basis.
And that's an increase from when to when?
From pre-industrial, say from 1850 to whatever time we're talking
about. And how much
about.
Has it risen already?
It's already risen 0.8 centigrade. So it's, we're almost halfway to that sort of danger point, 2 degrees.
How soon could we reach the tipping point if we don't do anything?
Well, that's the problem is that really it's a really hard question to answer because we don't have enough fundamental understanding of, you know, how to predict these tipping points. They're notoriously difficult to predict.
And but the consequences of doing nothing obviously could be.
Yeah. So huge. it's sort of a risk management question. If, you know, if your doctor says to you that you have a very high likelihood of a heart attack, but I can't tell you exactly what day your heart attack is going to happen.
There you go.
But you, would you just ignore your doctor's advice?
Good point. Or do you try to get your cholesterol down?
Yeah. Medical science isn't quite up to the task yet of predicting which day your heart attack is going to happen. But that still means you don't ignore your doctor.
Right.
That's kind of the place we're in with this abrupt climate change.
Okay. Can it be stopped is probably the $64,000 question there. And if so, what should we be doing to halt or reverse this trend?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, yes, it absolutely can be stopped. Don't listen to anyone who says that it's too late. We're all doomed. Let's just party until we die. Don't listen to those people. Okay. I mean, there is absolutely a lot we can do. And the big, easy things to do that we should absolutely be doing right now is just converting everything to solar, especially in Southern California. Mm-hmm. We need to be all driving electric cars 30 years from now.
That we charge up on our solar systems.
We're blessed with abundant sunshine, so we can all be driving solar-powered cars, basically. And so that trend is already sort of underway. It's, you know, but there needs to be public money spent because the private sector is still unwilling to take the big risks that are needed to invent the new technologies to make batteries a lot lighter and cheaper and make solar panels cheaper. So basically we need a revolution in how we get our energy. And it is possible, but it's going to take a little bit of priming the pump, basically. So
that brings me to a question about the Paris Climate Summit. As we're taping this, the world leaders are still meeting in Paris. They're just wrapping up the Global Climate Summit. Based on what you've seen so far happening in Paris, what is your assessment of the takeaway from that? Is enough being done? Are the world leaders taking this seriously enough, Jeffrey?
Well, I have to say I'm very encouraged by and very hopeful by what's going on in Paris right now. But if you just look at the numbers, they don't quite add up. I mean, the commitments to reduce CO2 emissions that have been put on the table at Paris are only about half of what's really needed to solve the problem. Effectively,
if they did everything, if they adopted every single proposal, it still only gets us halfway.
It gets halfway, And so a lot of people have been acknowledging that openly. It's not like it's any secret, but what many of the world leaders are saying is this is just the beginning. It's politically too difficult to go all the way right now, but so we're taking baby steps. We're going to revisit this in another 5 years and then another 5 years after that. And hopefully by then, the politics will be more amenable.
We are seeing some progress. We're seeing the Chinese come to the table for the first time. Of course, they're one of the hugest polluters with the coal plants and so forth. So, I mean, that's a promising sign. But also around the world, a lot of places are saying we don't have to wait for our world leaders to take action. Let's do something ourselves. Aren't we seeing a movement of a lot of local mayors, for example? And I think the San Diego City Council is going to be voting in the next couple of weeks on going to a 100% renewable energy plan for the city.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see all the local action that's happening. Jerry Brown, our governor, has been really out in front on this issue. And, of course, he's been at the Paris talks, and he corralled basically enough cities and towns and states to account for a quarter of all global emissions of carbon dioxide.
Wow.
And they're all forming their own sort of action team, and they're going ahead. They're not waiting for the the United Nations to yeah. do the work.
Well, that's fantastic. And I think that sometimes when it's done locally, in some ways, it's done better.
Yeah.
For example,
right.
in East County, I know not everyone was thrilled about the wind projects that, you know, the governor was a big supporter of because of the environmental damage of clear cutting, you know, 12,000 acres to put them in. But if you give a community a say so and they say, you know, we're happy to all put solar on our roofs or change yeah. what we drive or adopt mass transit. There's many, many approaches that can be taken to get us to the same goal, but with the support of the people that live in the communities instead of
yeah.
someone coming down and saying, you know, this is the only way to make it happen.
And I'm very encouraged that the private sector is really jumping into the fray. You know, Bill Gates and Elon Musk and a whole bunch of other super yeah. billionaires all put out a statement last week saying that they are going to put huge resources into figuring out how to make batteries lighter, how to make solar panels cheaper, mm-hmm. you know, all these important things that are going to
Brilliant.
Be part of the solution.
So when we see the 1% turning around saying we have to do something about this, we should
yeah.
all pay attention, I think.
No, it's very, very
hopeful. The greatest scientific and technology minds. Many
one, of them. One way to look at this is in sort of crass monetary terms is that somebody is going to get filthy rich from this big energy transition that has to happen. So it's a kind of a question of, well, who is going to get super rich from
well,
doing
yeah.
this?
And speaking of the money, we really should mention that when we hear these prominent climate science deniers, many of them aren't even scientists. They're politicians or other folks out there. But there's an awful lot of money, isn't there, behind that that's coming from, guess who? The fossil fuel industry that has so much to lose if we transition away from coal and oil and gas. Does this remind you of, you know, a couple decades ago when we saw the tobacco industry out there hiring so-called medical experts to say that tobacco doesn't cause cancer, cigarettes aren't bad for your health? And of course, they knew all along that mm. it was.
Yeah, it's fascinating to read the papers about, you know, the last week or two about Exxon being investigated by the Attorney General of New York State.
Tell us some more about that.
Well, it turns out that Exxon had a lot of top scientists working on the problem in the 1960s and 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no secrets. The scientists were allowed to freely publish their own work. And they all said, you know, burning fossil fuels is going to cause global warming. And this is a problem. And the Exxon management was okay with that. And it turned out that in 1981, something flipped, something switched. You know, basically
wow.
Exxon stopped funding all this basic
yeah,
scientific
research. Yeah, I
wonder why.
They didn't like the outcome too well.
Well, you know, it's tempting to speculate that their financial people just took a look at the numbers and said, if we want to make our stockholders happy, we just have to shut up and keep pumping. And so it's kind of a tragedy, but yeah, maybe there's a flaw in our economic system in that to keep the shareholders happy, you eventually do things that are not in the long-term best interests of everyone,
yeah.
including yourself.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of a self-destructive.
It's sort of a short-term versus long-term problem or something.
I'm going to give you the last word today, Jeffrey. What else would you like our listeners to know about climate change that we have not already mentioned today?
Well, I view climate change as a very soluble problem. I'm not a doom and gloom kind of guy at all. You know, I think there's a lot in common with sewage treatment, frankly. Nobody is against sewage treatment today. There is no such thing as a Republican position on sewage treatment
yeah.
or a Democratic position on sewage treatment. We just have to clean up after ourselves, and we all agree on that. I think in another 100 years, climate change is going to be seen the same way, just like we got to clean up after ourselves. And I think that it's very possible to do that. When sewage treatment was first introduced as an idea in the 1700s and then later in the 1800s, conservatives said that it would ruin the economy. Sound familiar?
It does. Fascinating.
And,
I did not know,
you know
that.
And I don't mean to make light of it, because actually at that time, pipes were not cheap. You know, you think about mm-hmm. putting pipes through a whole city, you might actually, well, that's going to break the bank, you know, but it was possible. We did it. How
yeah.
did we do it? You know, a little bit at a time, incrementally, but it is absolutely possible to make this energy transition. And It's even possible to make a lot of money doing it. And I think one of the things I love about San Diego is that there's a lot of entrepreneurs in San Diego who have precisely this idea that they are going to make money by producing green technologies and produce, making, you know, jobs. And who's against, you know, having more jobs and more money?
Nobody's Absolutely. We really are the hub of the green tech, clean tech industry at a national level right here
Absolutely.
In San Diego.
Yeah.
Right on the forefront of it.
And we could be better. We could be the place, the go-to place for solar technology.
Listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Jeff Severinghaus, who is a noted climate scientist from the Scripps Institute of Oceanography right here at the University of California, San Diego. Jeffrey, I want to thank you so very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. October 2nd is Free Ride Day across San Diego County, and it's also California's Clean Air Day. You're invited to ditch traffic gridlock, relax, and take a ride, all while helping to reduce air pollution. The Metropolitan Transit Service and the North County Transit District are both offering free rides to everyone on all three trolley lines and fixed-line buses, as well as the Coaster and Sprinter trains. Riders can even win prizes, including a full year of free transit, Aztec football tickets, MTS day passes, plus gift certificates to Vons, Starbucks, and Restaurant Week. You can enter by stopping by special booths on Free Ride Day or by sharing your Free Ride Day experience on social media by midnight October 2nd with the hashtag SDFreeRideDay19. Last year, over 53,000 trips were taken on our region's first ever Free Ride Day, and that's a record that MTS hopes to beat this year. Their website states, "We're opening up our whole system to change the way San Diego moves." If you haven't ridden transit before, MTS even has professional trip planners you can call at 619-233-3004. Weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. and weekends from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Or you can check the website's trip planner and watch a video with a step-by-step guide. You can download the One Bus Away app to zoom into your location and even find a map with transit stops near you, as well as arrival times for the next bus or trolley service. No trolley near you? No problem. You can leave your vehicle in one of the many park and ride lots near those transit stops.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ, 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.